Okay, I haven't heard
Love this one. Talk Radio.
You know, welcome, anybody out there listening. This is a continuation of Gather Round from Air Amartafio with Ruth Ann Amartafio and Gwen Berry from Here Be Monsters. Be good if I could go on and roll without the Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's my biggie.
I found us a beautiful little ditty to open up with, okay?
Shall Wonderful. I go?
Here we go.
Whatever, it seems like, okay, we're some of those targeted people, so.
There are. Well, I suppose you can look at it this way. It's a compliment.
Yes.
To be targeted, you know. I wonder when they're going to try to install another version of McCarthy. They were unable what's her name? Bachman was just too batshit crazy. I think that's the same. When you look up batshit in the dictionary, there's this big picture of her, that insane shot they had of her for Time or whatever it was.
Okay, yes, okay. And if you don't believe us, look up batshit. And we're not trying to insult the bats that are flying around my yard. I love the real thing.
The real thing is pretty awesome. I walk out of my driveway, we have these big overhanging trees, and we did not trim our trees this year. I guess that means, no, not going to say that, am I? I'm not dumb.
Well, sometimes you just don't want to trim them. I don't mind if a place looks a bit jungly, but I know some towns don't like that.
I love that look. I love jungly.
Yeah.
I don't like really crappy looking jungly, like, you know, hoedown kind. No. I like the jungle look, though. I like the overgrown look.
Right. It looks so lush. And that's why those English gardens that are always just not really structured quite. I mean, and they may have been really planned, but they don't look like it. And I just love to see that. Yeah.
That's Figgenhurst, Vita Sacco West lived, her and her husband. She planted gardens like that, beautiful ones.
Right. I've seen books of, her own gardens, the pictures.
So you had asked me about 9/11, and I was describing to you what my memory was. But we didn't hear yours, so I'm going to turn it.
Well, mine wasn't nearly as dramatic. Because I knew nobody, as far as I know, I was not friends or related to anybody who was in one of the towers. And I had been just watching one of the morning news shows that day, and it was time for it to go off, and they extended it. And they said, you know, we've just got this in, and they showed the video of the first one. And then while they were still on, I saw the second one. And I had called a friend, and I said, get your TV on. You know, this is big stuff. But I think it never got to me like some people. And a lot of it is because I didn't know anybody there. And I was in Kankakee, Illinois, as a matter of fact. And that was like about an hour from Chicago. And I know people started getting scared there. And I understood that. But I myself was not afraid. But if I would have been in your position, I would have been terrified in Boston.
You know, we weren't terrified.
Yeah. Well,
we really weren't terrified. What we were was overwhelmed with the whole idea that we didn't have a TV in front of us. We had one in the snack room, but we didn't have one. We were getting the blow-by-blow from customers calling in and saying, we're canceling. To give you an idea of how people in executive buildings across this country, well, from the Midwest to the East Coast, we had Philly, Atlanta, well, just a few in Atlanta, but Philly, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Chicago, a city in Ohio, Albany, New York City, of course, Boston, and Washington, D.C. And there were several, you know, to give you an idea, I think that Avantan lost like $4 million worth of business, something like that, in 2-day period. Now,
well, before 9/11, I had a friend who worked for that company in Chicago. So I was familiar with the company, but $1 million worth, huh? Wow.
Well, and you think about, well, this was because it wasn't just the orders, but it was also having people, you know, we had on L Street in Washington kept calling, and people were not just canceling. They stopped taking the cancellations and said, you know, we're closing down.
Sure.
Because they were told to. People forget. The city of Washington, D.C. went on a lockdown.
Right. And then they put out the no fly. I mean, the only ones that could fly then were the Saudi people who were friends of the Bush family.
Oh, yes, and they got out, yeah.
They took them out, but at that time, I didn't know that. I mean, at the time, I guess I was in shock because this country had never been, quote-unquote, attacked by anybody, well, within my lifetime, but, you know, I mean, not since, what, the 1776 or something, and... You know, then when I find out later that some of our alphabet agencies were probably in on it, et cetera, et cetera. So it still, as far as I'm concerned, it still hasn't been attacked by foreigners, unless you count the Israelis. I mean, it was something that I firmly believe it was another false flag, because it did get us into the wars, because people were so upset and the nationalism was just... thrown out everywhere, the patriotism. But, you know, one of my memories of that whole time was that night, and I only saw this once on a TV channel because, I mean, I was, like, glued then to the TV set. But several of our, and I didn't know who they were senators or representatives, they came out on the Capitol steps, and they stood around. I mean, here's this raggedy group of maybe 30 people, maybe not that many, and they started to sing America the Beautiful. And, I mean, I still just get choked up because these people, and this was no choir, trust me, but they were in shock, and you could tell it. They had not known about this. I mean, they didn't know what to do, and they just gathered there, and they sang this song. And it was the most moving thing out of the whole episode for me. It was just because these people who had been elected, you know, to these offices, and they didn't know, and they didn't know what to do. But you could see they were still stunned. And you know, when they sang that song, it was so touching. But, you know, then, if you recall then after that, we had all the, what was it called? The powder... Anthrax?
Yeah.
You know, that was supposedly being sent around and everything. And you know, that was, I mean, it was just something else to terrify people. And, I mean, I guess there really was some of it, but others was some powder. But, you know, that was it. I actually knew some people in Kankakee who were terrified of getting their mail because they thought it would have, you know, some... anthrax or something. And
I was saying I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, but they were so scared. And, you know, they were not people who were ever spoke up about anything. I mean, so there would have been no reason, nobody would have known. I mean, they were just, you know, regular people. But they were terrified.
Well, it really is what happened. That is one of the huge lessons in it. From the sociological point of view, we were whipped into control. There was that mass, you know, there was that mass social consciousness that was whipped into action. And I have to say, like I was saying to you before, that, you know, when we were going home, we stopped during the day for moments here and there in the catering department, especially after all the executives bugged out. And there was a lot of food around, I'll tell you that. We ate like that.
I bet.
And up on pan is good eating. So it was, but I tell you, we sat there and we were crying on and off. We didn't know what to think, but we just kept doing our job. And every time the phone would ring, we would jump to it. And a few people left the call center, said, "I don't care what you say, I'm getting out of here." Dee and I did not. We stayed. We felt we needed to, not for the company at all, but for the people who had been calling in. And having Ralph on the phone, knowing that Ralph had gotten out of the building, and then the young woman at the bottom of the first tower who had the cafe that was on the lobby, she kept calling saying, "What should I do? What should I do?" And I told the supervisor, I said, "You tell her to get her people the hell out of there. Are you crazy?" She said, "You can't do that. This is a business." I reverted into Gwen, and I said, "Oh, the fuck you can't." I said, "These people's lives are in jeopardy, and you're going to sit there and talk about a business?" Mm. You tell her to get hold of herself and to marshal her people out the door. And Dee said, "You really need to do that." And yeah, both of us stared. She finally said, "You should probably go." You know, I thought, good Lord, the people in charge. And really, that young woman who was, you know, just inadequate in so many ways, really did represent the government at that point. And I think I was seeing that. I think Dee was seeing it too. And getting home, though, and then going into, I lived right on the beach, and so did, you know, we both lived in the Birmingham down there. And I went into my room, it was like a studio, a small studio, and I turned on, you know, I had cable TV.
Right.
And all that was playing over and over again, and I have to tell you, it's quite true, my anger built and built. And finally, Asa, who was in New York, called, and he kept saying to me, and he kept calling me back for 2 days, saying, "Gwen, this is not who you are. Don't be angry. Don't be angry," you know?
Yeah,
and
wow.
It's the hate really puffed out, but then a lot of people like myself pulled back and realized the enormous tragedy and the consequences of hating. And like you said, Ra, you know, the days to come after that, there were some real ugly Americans, and there were some real heroes. And I don't mean the people who tore people out of, which all of those people, every New Yorker, especially the first responders, were princes of the planet and princesses. You know, they were just, the golden ones.
Yes.
To walk into that, to deal with that is an incredible thing to do, especially when you realize the velocity of everything that happened.
They had no training for that. I mean, whatever kind of training they had ever had, it was not for something of this magnitude.
No, but they did.
It was just not.
They did live up to. Do you remember them playing on the? You didn't have television, did you? They played on the TV this one clip that showed the first tower going down.
I watched all that. No, back then I had TVs.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
that was what I was saying. Like I heard the, Congress people sing and everything. So, no, I was glued for days to the TV.
Yeah, we all were. They kept playing it over and over again, and this one in the background, and they were shooting it from, I think, the Jersey side. And it was just this clear, clear film of everything that happened, and from a distance from Jersey Shore, I think. And the one girl kept saying, "Oh my fucking God," or something like that, and she screamed, and they kept playing that over and over again on national television.
Yeah.
It was as if they were drumming it into us. The complete
they were trying to keep the people just getting madder and madder. That this is like before people would go out in the old days to battle, they would do the dancing and everything and work themselves up into this frenzy.
Fire. It's called fire in the belly. Yes, I'm a kill.
That's what they were, yeah.
Wind harps of war. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they were doing.
And it was just incredible. I remember that there were people, there was an Iranian couple who had a convenience store in Weymouth. And the night of that, some kids or somebody had broken the windows of it and spray painted all these terrible Muslim vitriol all over the place. And there were things like that that happened, but that was the only one I knew of in all of my area, Massachusetts. And I will say this, the people, the Yankees in Massachusetts looked very badly on that. They thought that was pretty horrible. The consensus publicly was pretty, you know, you don't do that. And I can remember my sister down here in Florida, because right here in Boca Raton was where they had gone to live and taken flying lessons, those pilots. And so this area was under, and I guess they found ricin poison and something down here. This was the first place that showed up in the mail. And so there was a lot of anxiety in South Florida, in this area, in Palm Beach County. And my nephew, he went to a Catholic, or not a Catholic, but a Christian school, and there was a little girl there, I guess, who was of Middle Eastern descent, and his mother told me, you know, how he had asked her, you know, is it wrong that the kids say anything, because it felt wrong to him, and she told him, absolutely, it's wrong, and the teachers at this Christian school told the children after an event happened that they got wind of from the playground type of thing. These Christian teachers, and the name of the school is Zion Lutheran. And I have to say, you know, for all the crap we go through with the one God and the monotheism and the my God's better than your God crap that spawns
right.
this, and To their great credit, because there are good Christians in the world.
Oh yes, sure there are.
These folks admonish the kids. You know, people come in different colors, like you get different flavors of ice cream, and one is not better than the other. You might have a favorite, doesn't mean that vanilla is better than chocolate, type of thing, and. They admonished these children that they would not be tolerated if they showed signs of racism. And they, you know, and picked on anyone for anything, because that was what had actually made this terrible tragedy happen. And they said it's not our country that gets most of it. It's the countries in the Middle East and where these people had come from. That it happens almost every day, and it's all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they told this to grade school children, and in language that they understood. These teachers really have my respect for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there were, you know, I got to say, the majority of people, I think, in any given crowd, and I've got a good friend, Steve Gomes, who would argue this with me to the day, and I'll bet our friend Dr. Woody would too, but I am going to say this, I do think this is true, and this is what makes me that cosmic Pollyanna. I think most people are good. I really do. And when tragedies like this happen, I think that we each, to whatever gifts we have, for some it's the person who's watching or standing beside waiting for those who are working it to come over and then they offer the comfort, or it's the ones who race inside to bring people out of the burning building. It, you know, we all have a role to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that the, like you said, I mean, those teachers, give them a credit for being wise enough to actually, instead of adding fire to the flame or, you know, gas to it, they really talk to the kids. And I agree. I think most people are very good. I mean, I think humanity is basically good. I think sometimes it's weak, sometimes it's ignorant, and many times just plain scared.
Yeah.
But I think basically very good. And so, you know, that's what gives me a lot of hope for the future. And you were talking earlier about 200 years down the line, you know, what it's going to be like. And I do think that we're going through the birthing pangs of a complete new age. And it's going to be so much better. I've got all kinds of plans for coming back and enjoying it. So I know I'm going to see you here. We just have to get from here to there. And, but, you know, with 9/11, a friend of mine, I found out later, was teaching in Dubai. And she and her husband, they didn't know. I mean, that morning they got up and ready and she went off to school. And the kids greeted her there, her students, and said, we're so sorry about what happened to your country. And it was like, wow, you know, she just hadn't known. And she said she felt so loved and everything that, you know, I mean, these were just school kids.
Yeah. But
they, you know, and of course, they knew and they had talked to their families and all, but there was no, oh, wow, you know, let's get those Americans, you know, because now we're at war kind of thing. It was nothing like that. And so I think that was the way around the world. I mean, people were shocked. And then, you know, the funny thing, you mentioned the 19 supposed hijackers, and, you know, there's at least six of them now who, I mean, they've done interviews since then. You know, they're in Saudi Arabia and another country or two. I mean, they weren't even here for that.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, all the things we were led to believe, the passport that was found, you know, everything from those buildings was in tiny powder form, except this one passport that made it completely intact. It's like, oh my God, you know. But these things, I guess because I'm not a stupid person by nature, and I was just sort of falling for the whole thing at the time, so that tells me I was in shock. But more than in shock, I was in denial because, you know, a lot of people right from the get said there's something funny here. And I couldn't believe that, you know, I just couldn't believe that anybody in this government could have known, could have had anything to do with it. I mean, I was just totally in denial. And then when I was shown more and more things as time went by, it was like, for me, that was one of those, you know, throughout your lifetime you have birthing moments, I think. You know, it's like, okay, this is a brand new lifetime now. For me, that was one. When I finally, I mean, that was it, but I didn't realize it. But when I finally realized, it was just like, okay, so everything I've been taught and everything I've believed from what I learned in school, from, you know, the 4th of July parades and speeches and all this, it's all based on crap. And it's like, oh, my goodness. I shouldn't say it's all based on crap.
But I would say that we were fed a bill of goods as far as history goes. But I don't for a moment that every president, every soldier, I think it's been rotten apples in the barrel.
Mm-hmm. The problem is we have given them some kind of power. We've given these rotten apples the power. And so that's why we're in this position we are with the multinational corporations owning the politicians. We've got to take back our own power. People must be empowered.
The part of, that I was saying about triggering a great awakening, I think it was a Nostradamus moment. Can we go there?
Yeah, yes.
I think it was a Nostradamus moment. I think it was an awakening moment. Now, I actually took a course at Cornell on Michel de Nostradamus. And his quatrains, his poetry, is open to just such vast interpretation. And I think the only way to truly find any kind of real clue or confirmation is to allow history to play out and then go back and see if you can actually, you know, wrap it around an event. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I do think so intuitively. It was one of those Nostradamus moments, like the assassination of President Kennedy, which was another moment where people kind of went nuts. And we had in just before it, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, which had people walking on eggshells too.
Yeah. Anything to do with the Cold War was just like. And there again, if you read a lot of things that have been written since then, things come together. I mean, it wasn't just an isolated incident. There's a reason for it. And that's the scary part when you think that, well, these people in power have been planning all of these things. They may not have planned it down to the nth degree, but they've planned things, just like where we are now with Syria. You know, Syria was one of those seven countries that General Wesley Clark said that he saw the paper of that we were going to take over. Thought out ahead of time. And it's for financial gain. Financial gain, resources, which comes back to financial gain. Yeah.
Right. And, well, any kid who's played Army with the toy soldiers, you know, or who's reenacted battles, like even Civil War battles. I used to like that kind of thing a lot when I was a kid. And when you have all those troops on the ground and you're looking from overhead, it's a godlike kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got all that kind of money and you're looking from the top down, it's that godlike kind of feeling. And you think you're going to get away with it because you get away with so much.
Right.
But the thing is that it even though not everyone thinks, you know, that 9/11 was a false flag, a flag to get us, you know, enough people think there was something wrong with it, and there was a lot wrong with the Iraq War. People are waking up.
I agree. I mean, it's taking a while, and it gets very frustrating. And like people, like the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, and all. I mean, they are continually trying to, you know, wake people up. And I know it's frustrating for them, but we. And I understand because I'm a very impatient person and I'm working on patience in this lifetime, one of the many things I'm working on. But, you know, like in the whole grand scheme of things, I mean, it's been 12 years and that's not that long. Sometimes things take a lot longer. I think that what we're feeling, though, is that acceleration, because we've been destroying the planet so rapidly and everything that we, you know, there's scientists that say we only have X number of years before it's totally like we can never, you know, it's just we've totally destroyed it kind of thing, which I don't think is going to happen because I have some kind of faith that, well, it's just not going to. But I understand that because things are accelerated, we need to be finding out the truth and doing something about it. And, like, we don't have 300 years to, you know, fiddle-dick around with it. We need to change our political systems. We need to change our economic systems. There's a lot of changes we need to make.
Well, there's no denying that. It's just so when you take a look at what we accomplished with OWLS and what we didn't accomplish, what we did not accomplish seems to weigh too heavy, but that's the wrong way to look at it. The right way to see it, from my point of view, the right way to see it is that it happened and people are aware. And every time something else comes up, more happens. You have to keep the faith. And I think also there are these, to borrow the term again, these Nostradamus moments that are occurring. And I think Syria is one. I definitely feel as though we're being sort of catapulted forward because time's sort of running out, as it were. You know, how long will there be oxygen? I'm talking about years, not a couple of weeks till war or something. I'm talking about years.
Right.
But when you consider, it's been 12 years since 9/11.
Yeah.
But there are definitely catalysts that are basically triggering more and more people awake. I think this whole thing with Syria has really got people sitting down and shaking their heads and going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think we got authority smashers in the house. Hey, hi, guys. Call in if you would like to chime in on 9/11. No special thoughts. Well, okay, that's fine. He's just listening in. We were originally, for people tuning in, we were originally scheduled on Gather Round over at Era Martaveo. And we had some, and it happens all too much. We had some communications difficulties, and we had to shut down Era Martaveo Gather Round. So we were just doing the rest of it here because Uncle Pinko is not on tonight.
Uncle Pinko, yes. Uncle Pinko. I guess he had a way good time at Burning Man, so I'm sure he's going to be referencing that as time goes on.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Yeah, who wouldn't?
We should be living Burning Man, okay, babe? We should be living Burning Man.
There you go. Yeah.
From everything I've seen about it, I don't mean that, you know, every night we should be getting smashed and just partying or something. No, not at all. But we should every day be creating community and creating our art or working on whatever is fundamental to making a community healthy and whole that we are enjoying and we're good at. I really do think so, yes. The more of us who live our lives that way and make choices that way. And there's also the community responsibility you have to love. So if it's your turn to work for a week at the Reclamation Center, you do it. You do it with a happy, healthy heart.
Exactly. I mean, you just, you know, and you can take pride in that, and it gives you that just that feeling that you're actually contributing. So that's all good. But,
well,
yeah, somebody recently called me a party girl, and I was like, really? I said, well, I have been called so much worse than that, so I'll just take it and go with it. But I don't describe myself that way. But I think that, yeah, we've got to celebrate as we go along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Practice makes perfect, as Mither used to say.
You know? Exactly, exactly. And I'm not even trying for perfect. You know, that's way down the line. Just trying for practical, what is that, again? What is something that really works? A win-win-win. Complete win-win-win situations. That's what I'm.
Boy, I've got a little soundbite for that. I'm going to take one of Uncle Pinko's.
Okay.
He knows what he wants, don't you, Rocco?
Sure.
What's that? Tell him, Rocco. Well, I want. He wants more, don't you, Rocco?
Yeah, that's it. More. That's right. I want more.
Will you ever get enough? Will you, Rocco?
Well, I never have. No, I guess I won't. You, do you know what you want?
Yes, and I had hopes once, but I gave them up.
Hopes for what?
A world in which there's no place for Johnny Rocco.
Okay. From Uncle Pinko. Okay.
He's got quite a lineup here. He knows how to throw a radio show, boy.
Yeah.
We should all have that.
I'm so glad he's back on the air.
We should all have that. You know, he told me today that he has the opportunity, I guess, to get a job with doing something he would enjoy for about 4 weeks, and it'll take him to the extreme northwest of the country. And if he gets it, I think that's great if he goes for it. And he said he might be doing his show and he might not. He doesn't know what his connections are going to be. But you know what? He's always got space on Here Be Monsters to fire it up or not, whatever he chooses. Because it is a pleasure to listen to Hébert when he gets going. Yeah.
He's just really, really funny.
I learn a great deal. I have learned a great deal listening to Pinko the Bear. There's just no doubt about it. I do know that one of the other things that we tend to forget about the 9/11 anniversary is that it's an anniversary. I will say this for the Obama administration. They have not made it as big a manipulation of the social, you know, the mindset of the country as the previous, the anchors did. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's true. But, yeah, I've just been surprised today with what I've seen online, basically on Facebook, about it, because I haven't seen things from certain people that I expected to see more from about it. And I don't know, maybe we're more into like 10, 15, 20-year things than 12 years, but I don't know.
I got a moment. If you got a second here, I want to play something that I think is worth listening.
Is this Mike?
Oh, sorry. It is. Yeah.
Oh yes, please.
So I'm going to play that. I'm going to play it from the video here, and let's do her.
Before the towers collapsed into a white noise of bodies and strewn paper, there were people in the windows. They clutched family photos and they jumped, became human tombstones. Falling into the shrapnel of a city covered in the ash of its own citizens, a city shapeless and somewhere else writhing as it fell. That night, I feared everything but darkness, so I slept on the floor at the foot of my father's bed. It's a place where monsters and planes are made easy work of. That morning, I went to the window. I wiped my hand along the sill. I watched my fingers turn gray, and I thought, bodies. But I didn't want to wash them. I wanted to go to the roof. I did. I saw the smoke crawling into a postcard. The smell was everywhere. I wondered if they would change the postcards now. But smoke were once were towers, and then address them to our relatives in Texas and Carolina, where they were rearing to go to war and say, I wish you were here. I wish you could see these clouds forming under the clouds. I wish you could touch the smell with your nostrils every time you breathe. I wish you could run your hand along your window and wonder how the bodies got through the door and see what it's like to live in the most Beverly Hills version of a war zone and realize what war might just look like, feel like, taste like in your breakfast cereal when you realize you're sitting there digging Cheerios out of a bowl when they're digging bodies out of the ground. That day was not about your God or their God, because when God happens, no one is right. These were times when we lied to our children. When you lie to children, no one is right. I can't make this any clearer to you. That day had no black or white, because under that rubble, everyone was gray. Under that rubble was no red, white, or blue. Under that rubble was just gray. Now I know, New Yorkers, we talk a lot. Sorry. But I'm taking this one back from my home, because under that rubble was not your country. Under that rubble was our city, our town, our mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, sons, and daughters that day. No one in New York grabbed rifles. We grabbed bandanas and shovels, and we started digging because our lives were underneath that rubble, and the firemen were looking for the bodies. It had been 10 years, and my friend is still looking for her father's body. Your war is not helping her find him. Your war has done nothing but add to the list of little boys like me who wish to sleep at the feet of their father's beds. My father worked nowhere near the Trade Center, but I didn't know that then. What I knew was that the phone lines were down, and that until I heard his voice, so was he. Your war has done nothing but add to the list of boys in New York, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, the list of boys who are still waiting for their fathers to come home.
Quite a piece, isn't it?
I had seen where you posted that, and I listened. It's like, it's wonderful. Yeah, still waiting for the fathers. And that goes, I mean, that's not just necessarily, even though it was, you know, written about, like, the U.S. service people, but everybody, you know, so many of these fighters around the world, they have families, too. And, you know, they're all wanting the same thing that the people from here want. They want their children to be safe. They want to have enough food for them, a place to shelter them, education. You know, we're all wanting the same things. And we really don't get it by killing each other for people who could care less about us. We're numbers to them, and they just figure, well, you know, there'll always be somebody else to pop up and take our place. So it's
true.
I was reminded that on September 11th, 1973, do you remember what happened in Chile?
Finish day, right?
It was, well, the CIA had
yes,
some kind of a coup, and the president, Allende, was overthrown.
Right, and they put Pinochet in, right?
Yeah.
And they began, as Naomi Klein very eloquently marks out in The Shock Doctrine, which is a book or a film that everybody should take a peek at and get what the world is really doing and what this government is really capable of and what they're really up to. After Katrina, at that time, they instituted that Chicago Economic School of Uncle Milty Friedman's ideals of what capitalism is and completely devastated the South American economy. I don't think it was just that country, honestly. And then,
they did that to a lot of countries down there. Yeah.
And basically, they're still trying to work it out. I mean, look what they're doing to New Orleans since Katrina. They're trying to buy up everything. There are no public schools left in New Orleans. It's all charter schools. People have to pay to have their children educated in under the framework and under the auspices of lies and histories that the people who own those schools want people thinking. I mean, this is a horrifying thing. This is like, you remember when Steve Jobs made that incredible commercial for Apple? You know, I mean, Hillary.
I don't know. How long ago was it? Was it before I got rid of the TVs?
That was in the early 80s, I believe.
I probably saw it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, he made this incredible commercial. Whereas it was 1984, and you know it was a spinoff to say, you know, IBM and Microsoft is just completely controlling your techno world, and we're here to smash that, you know. And basically, that was the beginning of Apple Macintosh, and we forget Apple is a rebellion, you know, and a rebellion for the individual and individual use of technology. It's marched its way into a different place. I will say that we all know it, even though, you know, I'm one of those tech people that is convinced that Apple is the only way for me. I'm a Midland tech personality. You know what I mean? In the middle stream. And I know Apple works. Mac is better than the other side of the fence over there with the Microsoft and the IBM. For me, Mac, once you go Mac, you don't go back.
I've heard that, though, from several people. Yeah, I've heard that. It is the supreme elite, and you don't go back. Yeah.
What was the first time you had a computer? I was thinking about that the other day. I actually had a Radio Shack computer. I got onto the internet with Netscape. And back in the day, maybe, I've been on the net for a long, long time. Do you know when it was? It was when Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade came out. That's a long time ago, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. You've been on.
I
yeah.
had a floppy, floppy, you know. I watched them go from them big ones, those like 6x6, 6 squared, you know, floppy, floppy, you know, you could wave it floppy disk, to the little plastic disks. God, I still got some of those somewhere in a box, you know.
Wow.
My nephew has a little like key ring with little sticks, memory sticks on it for all of his college work. I mean, do you know how many books I had to carry in my knapsack in school?
yeah. No, I mean it is this technology is just amazing.
And it's going to be one of, I think, singularly one of the greatest tools for awakening the planet. We're at the end of our hour, darling.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Gwen, for, you know, scheduling us on Here Be Monsters. And we didn't have any issues with anything. Maybe you... No, it was nice. Yeah.
We actually did not. We did a good job. I'll defer to Authority Smashers to give us a little critique later on.
Okay.
and whoever else is out there listening, So basically, this is the end of Era Martifeo's Gather Round session for this evening. You'll find it posted on social networks alongside Ruth Ann's Raw Gather Round show.
Right. So thank you again so much, Gwen. I really appreciate it.
Cindy, it's my pleasure. And I probably won't play off, but I'll give us a sign off here with something nice to listen to. And,
okay.
And then we will be back tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. for the Consciousness Shift with Nicole Tomasini and myself. And tomorrow we are talking about the bleed over between dimensions, because it's happening. You just got to recognize it. And a lot of phenomenon, what they're calling physical, non-physical, and physical phenomenon is occurring. And that's going to be the topic of discussion tomorrow night. On the
Consciousness. Yes.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Something's going on out there and in there. I mean, you feel like it's
going on. Yeah.
You ever think that the cat's walking on the bed and then you find out it isn't?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's part of the phenomenon.
Yeah, because it's like I turn the light on or I look around and they're not in the room with me. Mm-hmm.
Right. But they are saying, you know, do something about that. So tomorrow night, the Consciousness Shift with Paul Tomasini. And this was brought to you by Air Amartaseo on Blog Talk Radio. Look it up. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Quinn.
Rise and look around you, and you will see who you are. On a clear day, how it will astound you that the glow of your being outshines every star. You'll feel pulse at every mountain, sea and shore, and you can hear from far and near a world you've never before. But on that clear day, on that clear day, you can see forever and ever, ever.
This is Here Be Monsters Radio, and we will see you tomorrow. Well, we'll hear you tomorrow.